From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Governor Malibu comes off the rail with a late bid, but it is a shocker. A maiden has won the Jim Dandy. Lauban went wire to wire.
What a horse race. These two nose and nose to the wire. Beholder on the inside, Stellar Wind on the outer. Stellar Wind's going to beat her.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
The Betfair.com Haskell has turned into a thriller. An Exaggerator has gone right on by. A tremendous performance from Exaggerator under Ken DeSormo to win it by two.
Oh, my goodness, look at Frosted today. Frosted's 10 in front. Frosted is absolutely rubbed in the Met Mile. He was wrapped up.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy Traverse Stakes Day to everyone throughout HRRN Nation. The 147th running of the Midsummer Derby coming up later today, 5:44 Eastern Time, and you are going to hear it right here exclusively with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you with us on an absolutely picture-perfect morning for the sport of kings here in Saratoga Springs, New York, with temperatures currently in the mid-60s, but the sun has risen, the racetrack illuminated in sunshine, horses making those final preparations on a fast main track, a turf course that likely is going to be more on the firm side of things than it is on the softer side, and under powder blue skies. It is simply spectacular. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and JT, we say it all the time when it's like this here in Saratoga, but it really does not get any better than this if you're a horse racing fan.
Yeah, this is the kind of day that you want the Travers to be on. Just a beautiful morning and a nice warm summery day. The fans are already out. There's a lot of people here that have reserved their picnic tables and brought their coolers. I always laugh because the men run in and get the table, and then their wives come in with the 400-pound beer cooler behind, and they go, that's a good system. But, you know, it's just one of those great Saratoga days, and it's going to be a fantastic card. We've got a Breeders' Cup-style card here this afternoon, and one race is better than the next. Can't wait. Even the race after the Travers is a phenomenal race with Lady Eli making her comeback and Miss Temple City running and Centurio Italia, just a fantastic field, so it's going to be a great day of racing here.
Yeah, the Grade 2 Ballston Spa. And all together, there are seven stakes races on this Saturday program. Six of those are Grade 1s. There is win and you're in action abound for the Breeders' Cup because you have the Personal Ensign, which is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Distaff, the Ballerina, a win and you're in for the Filly and Mare Sprint, the Forgo, we'll see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and the Sword Dancer, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf. So not only do you have all the prestige of racing here at Saratoga and trying to win a race on Travers Day, not only do you have the gigantic purses and the great wagering opportunities, but you have a lot on the line if you're pointing toward the Breeders' Cup in November.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, these races are important for everybody. Not only are they important from the win and you're in standpoint, but they're also major prep races, and they're races that can tell you whether your horse is moving forward, going to be a Breeders' Cup type horse, or maybe you need to reconsider and find an easier spot. So they're very important in the overall scheme of things as we head towards the end of the year championships. And you couldn't have put together a better card, really.
Speaking of end of the year championships, that Travers Stakes, which now has a field of 13, by the way, we had one defection from the original 14 that were entered earlier this week. That was Majesto, who spiked a fever for trainer Gustavo Delgado yesterday morning, had to be scratched. But we have 13, including the Preakness winner, Exaggerator, and the Belmont winner, Creator. And Jude, quite honestly, in a year where the three-year-old picture is a bit muddled and a bit more wide open than we've seen the past couple of years, this is a race that could very well determine who's going to be the three-year-old champion at the end of the season.
Yeah, it definitely could. You know, if Exaggerator and Creator don't run that well, and maybe a horse like Gunrunner steps up or whatever, you know, you got to consider Nyquist and whoever wins this race. If it's not one of those top two, looking at the championship. But, you know, you never know. There's a lot of racing between now and the end of the year. These horses are going to compete again. There's some more derbies coming up. And so we just have to be patient and see what happens. I mean, today's race, outstanding. Just a huge field, a lot of contenders. Every trainer you talk to thinks they can win, and that doesn't happen very often, especially in a field like this. No, it seems like nobody's afraid of one another. Yep. They all think they've got a big chance, and that's how the three-year-old picture's been this year. It's been kind of a wide-open three-year-old picture.
Well, Saratoga is packed already. We are still a couple of hours away from first post, a few hours actually, and we are still several hours away from that 147th running of the Traverse Stakes at 5:44 Eastern. But one of the great traditions of Traverse Stakes morning is that people line up well in advance of the gates opening. The gates opened right around 7 o'clock Eastern. There were people lined up down Union Avenue by 6 o'clock at the latest, and it was packed. And as soon as the gates opened, people took off trying to get to their tables, trying to get to their seats, whatever it might be, and just reserve that spot that they can watch all the action here today. And as we told you, a great day of racing here in Saratoga Springs. And Jude, you look around here. We are positioned 30 yards from the main track, our usual setup here at Saratoga, which is spectacular. Just to our right is the finish line, and you know, you could almost fire a bow and reach the finish line from here. It's not that far. And then to our left, the sun coming up at the top of the stretch, simply glorious morning and a great atmosphere on Travers morning.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. You got the fountain in the infield, and everybody's out having coffee and watching the horses go. We've had several breezers this morning on the main track, and the turf course looks sensational. A little dew on the turf course, a little sparkly dew on the grass, and it's going to be just a great day. We can't say enough nice things about Saratoga this morning.
You'll want to make sure to join us this afternoon, 3 to 6 Eastern Time. All of that exclusive Travers Day coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network on Sirius XM Channel 93. That's the same channel you're listening to right now on affiliates across the country and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. And for all of your Spanish-speaking friends, make sure you tell them, wherever they may be, they can listen to that 3-hour coverage this afternoon in Spanish with Roberto Rodriguez, Eloy Vielma, and Hall of Fame jockey Ramon Dominguez, 3 to 6 Eastern on HRRN and Espanol.com. And let me tell you something, that show is going to be gangbusters. We had an opportunity yesterday to get Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez and future Hall of Famer Javier Castellano together for a one-on-one conversation. And those are the last 6 Eclipse Award-winning jockeys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Think about that. They sat down, they talked racing, they talked Travers, and that interview coming up in Spanish on HRN and Espanol this afternoon.
2 guys, 6 Eclipse Awards in 6 years. Pretty impressive.
Very impressive. Our poll question this morning at HRRN on Twitter, pretty simple. We just want to let you chime in as to who you think is going to win the 147th Travers Stakes. So do it right now at HRRN. Who wins the Travers today? We want to hear from you, HRN Nation, and maybe we'll determine over the next 2 hours who might be the likely favorite going to the post at 5:44 Eastern Time this afternoon. Very busy program today. We're going to get to our first break. When we come back, we're going to have the privilege of visiting with the legendary race caller here in Saratoga, and that is Marshall Cassidy. He called races here from 1979 to 1990, not just Saratoga, but all of the NYRA tracks. His resume, well, it's as long as your arm in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He's done it all, and it should be an enjoyable visit coming up in the first segment of the show. You're going to hear my one-on-one interview with jockey Javier Castellano right around 8:35 Eastern Time. At 9 o'clock Eastern, Chad Brown took the time to talk about his 3 Travers contenders earlier this week. You'll hear that interview in its entirety. And then at 9:25 Eastern, Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times-Union going to be here. Of course, our Right or Wrong segment presented by Sunrise Stallions, who are also the sponsor of our Travers coverage this afternoon. Sunrise Stallions, home to Big Brown Frost Giant and his full brother Heavy Breathing. That segment comes up in the second half of the program as well. So a lot of things to get to. We'll do it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Wonder what it feels like to be an owner inside the paddock before your horse races, but don't know how to get started? Contact West Point Thoroughbreds to get inside the game. You can play in a big way right away by owning pieces of multiple horses, which can increase your chances of action. West Point Thoroughbreds has been professionally managing racing partnerships for 20 years. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtv.com. That's westpointtv.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Adina Spring Stallion Point of Entry, a five-time Grade 1 winner viewed by many to be the heir to Dyna Former's global legacy, with first crop weanlings already realizing six-figure sums at both Keeneland and Tattersall's in Newmarket. As a racehorse, Point of Entry was a truly great American turf horse, becoming the first since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined 9 lengths.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by 4 lengths. A Hall of Fame ride it was. Point of Entry wins the Sword Dancer, and they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
Point of Entry returned the following year to win the Grade 1 Gulfstream Park Turf and Grade 1 Manhattan, and also displayed the ability and the pedigree to perform at the highest level on dirt. Point of Entry, standing at Adina Springs in Paris, Kentucky. Visit adinastallions.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what's going on in the insurance world?
Mike, with the yearling sales fast approaching, we offer Fall of the Hammer coverage to buyers for their auction purchases.
Why is Fall of the Hammer so important?
When the auctioneer drops the gavel and the buyer signs a sales slip, ownership transfers. There is an immediate exposure to the buyer for the purchase price. By calling our office prior to the sale, we can arrange for immediate protection, so there is no gap in coverage.
Are there any other exposures?
Absolutely. There is liability exposure in the event the yearling should cause bodily injury or property damage to others. An equine owner's liability policy will provide just the right coverage. It's stuff like this that keeps me awake at night.
Thanks, Joe, for speaking with us today. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Clifford Trevor will not give up as they approach the top of the stretch. Easy Goer still second. And those two have opened about six on Shy Tom moving up in third. Clifford Trevor nearest the rail. Easy Goer on the outside. Those two approach the equal. There goes Easy Goer. Easy Goer gets the lead. Easy Goer getting clear by two. Clifford Trevor second by six. Shy Tom is third. Easy Goer, New York's horse of the year, has the lead in the Travers Stakes.
Mike Penajudefeld, back here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, positioned trackside in beautiful Saratoga Springs, New York, getting ready for the 147th running of the Midsummer Derby. Again, our coverage this afternoon, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, and so many memories when you think back on the Travers, certainly for me anyways, that call by Marshall Cassidy of Easy Goer winning in 1989. I remember vividly standing at the rail, and I remember being at the top of the stretch at the picnic tables, and Easy Goer flashed by. If people read my bio on our website, they will know that I had $2 across the board on Easy Goer. He was a heavy favorite, and I thought I had won the lottery. And ever since that moment, I was hooked for life. And Marshall Cassidy, the man whose voice you just heard, now joins us on the Equine Forum. Marshall, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Doing very well. And a little trip down memory lane for me and maybe even for yourself, listening to that call of Easy Goer winning here in 1989.
Yeah, that brought back some memories. That was one heck of a nice horse we had.
Oh, absolutely tremendous. You know, one interesting thing, Marshall, for me anyways, being a native of this area, when I walk into Saratoga, there's a lot of memories that always come flooding back. How about for yourself, having called races here for so long? What's it like for you when you walk into Saratoga?
Well, it's like stepping back in history. I'm about fifth generation in the game, so I've been in it all my life. And when I walk onto the track, I compare it. I can't help it, but I compare it to Belmont Park and Aqueduct. And the comparison is quite stark. Up here, it's a natural setting, and what better place to have a natural animal but our horse? It's a wonderful place to be, especially today. The weather couldn't be better. We have no rain in the forecast. The main track ought to be fast. The turf course is firm, and a fine race, a field of 14.
It's almost like it's a national park. Would you say that?
I would say that entirely. The grandstand is very old, but has been kept up and is very comfortable to be in. The infield is maintained perfectly. And, you know, what better day to spend but at the racetrack at Saratoga Springs.
Marshall, spend a little time looking back on some of your more memorable Traverse Stakes that you had the opportunity to be part of in the announcer's booth.
Well, the first one I called for national television was in 1979, and that was General Assembly. And that was an exciting day for me because I had never called the Traverse Stakes on national TV. The race developed in a surprising fashion when General Assembly broke clear of the field at the top of the stretch and went on to set the stakes record at 2 minutes. It was a great day for me. I couldn't have asked for a better race. The following year, in 1980, Temperance Hill ran, and he won on a wet track. He just came off a Belmont victory, but he really paid a nice price in the Belmont, and we were very happy to see him win again. Runaway Groom in 1982. There was a surprise. I darn near missed the horse. I was talking to Larry Colmus, our esteemed announcer, yesterday about the 1982 edition. And in that race, we had the winner of the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes, three different horses. I think they were Gato del Sol and Aloma's Ruler and Conquistador Cielo. And we expected one of those three to win the race. However, at the eighth pole, those three across the track were joined by a horse from Canada, Runaway Groom. I didn't really talk about Runaway Groom, and I was very worried that I'd get some mention of the horse. I must have said Runaway Groom 15 times between the eighth pole and the finish. It was a heck of a finish, and quite a surprise for me, believe me.
You mentioned that the three horses were expected to win. Did you do much handicapping before you called a race to figure out where the horses were going to be during a race, or any?
I would do that a little bit for the races, but I wouldn't spend a preponderance of my time anticipating how a race would be run. Too often, the wrong horse wins. So, just a general idea would give me some idea of how the race might be run. And I was not surprised in that particular field that the three big horses would be vying for the lead and they came into the stretch. But I was surprised by that horse from Canada.
Well, Marshall, you think back on your career, not just as a race caller here, but you mentioned the television coverage that you had the opportunity to be part of that afternoon. And, you know, you had the opportunity on radio to work with people like Wynn Elliott, who was kind of a pioneer in putting racing on radio, and somebody who really set the stage for people like us who get the opportunity to do that now. You worked with guys like Brent Musburger and Eddie Arcaro as analysts. Take me back to those days and working around some of those people. That had to be very special.
Well, you mentioned Wynn Elliott. I'm awfully glad you did, because he was a master of his trade and he was an awfully nice man. Wynn Elliott really cared about horse racing. As a matter of fact, just for a moment aside, thinking back to one of our low points in the business, when we had the great match race between Ruffian and Foolish Pleasure, and Ruffian suffered a terrible injury and she was taken over to the hospital, who was the one radio journalist sitting in the parking lot waiting for word of the surgery but Wynn Elliott? And he sat in his car until the very end, and I thought that was really above and beyond the call. A great man who cared about a great business and a great sport, horse racing. Wynn Elliott, I shall always remember him very fondly. Brent Musburger, He was a lot of fun to work with. Jimmy the Greek, he was a challenge. He was likely to say something sarcastic as he was to say something positive, but he was entertaining, and he was always the wild card in any of our telecasts. Eddie Arcaro, I only worked with him once, but I enjoyed the opportunity. Another gentleman who came from the trade, a fine jockey who rode for many, many years and really set the standard for jockeys back in the 50s and the 60s. We had a lot of fun work together on that one telecast. Charles Cicanti, she was part of the team. Frank Wright, he was a great, important part of the team. The racing coverage back in the 70s and the 80s was sublime. That's when the racing was in its golden period, and the best team to handle it at the time, I thought, was the CBS crew, and I was lucky enough to work with them. Yes, that was a great, great time.
Yeah, that was the golden age of racing. Did you ever have a horse that became a favorite of yours that you called over the years?
Oh, that's a tough one to answer. Boy, after working for 12 years, and then many years before that as the backup announcer, I don't know. I would have as much fun with the claiming horses as I would with the stakes horses. Summer Squall was one fine two-year-old, ran in the hopeful stakes in the late 80s, and I'll not forget his hopeful. He came through the stretch, and he burst between horses, a very gutsy ride by his jockey, went off to win by daylight in the hopeful, and, well, you know, Summer Squall became a great foundation sire, so I think I might list him at near the top anyway. Summer Squall was a fine, fine horse.
You know, Marshall, I had an opportunity to talk with my stepfather yesterday, who now lives down in Florida, and he grew up around New York racing, you know, certainly listening to Chick Anderson and to yourself with all of those memorable calls. But he brought up one race in particular. He says, ask Marshall about the Belmont Stakes when Conquistador Cielo just dominated the race that afternoon. How about that day? What do you remember about that performance by Conquistador Cielo?
Well, I remember being very favorably impressed. The horse had come out the previous Monday, Memorial Day, and had won the Met Mile 5 days before the Belmont. How could he have done that? He did it in stakes record time. Oh, my word! He won the Belmont Stakes in 5 days' time. I just was beyond myself with that race. Of course, he went off the favorite, but there were those who doubted he could do it. Two races in 1 week. Woody Stevens was the master of that one.
Visiting with legendary caller Marshall Cassidy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Marshall, you think about your style, which was very, very unique, and your delivery, and when you think about your approach to calling races, how would you describe that style and that approach to actually getting into the booth, getting set, and calling the races?
Well, I would say it was probably the same as all the announcers who call races today and have called them. You spend a lot of time memorizing the field, and we spent a lot of time associating the names of the horses with the silks that the jockeys wear. Easy Goer had black silks with a red cap, and you would drum that into your brain, Easy Goer, black and red, black and red, black and red, Easy Goer, until you get it nailed. And you do that for each horse until the start of the race. Keep that in your mind for the duration of the race, and then immediately forget it because you have another race to call afterward. Being more specific, my style was different from today's announcers because I was told, as was Chick, as was Dave Johnson, as was Cappy, to stop the call before the race. In Cappy's time, Cappy had to stop the call at the 16th pole. I'm not sure why, but that's what they wanted him to do, so he would say so-and-so had the lead as they raced to the wire, and they'd pass the 16th pole and be 6 seconds of dead air. Dave Johnson came in, and he carried the call from the 16th pole to the wire. He finished the call at the wire, which is something that Chick Anderson also did, and then I followed up. Announcers after me have carried the race call beyond the wire, and that has become the standard. It, incidentally, is a better way to do it. When I listen to Larry Comas call a race and I hear his call extend beyond the wire, it is a suitable conclusion to the event that has just happened. I wish that I had been able to do it before, but that's not the way we were supposed to do it. So my particular call style is different, at least for the end of the call, because I would end it abruptly at the wire.
I think one of the things that I loved about the way that you called races is you didn't scream. And a lot of times you hear track announcers, you know, yelling and just going crazy, especially at the end of the race. And you always brought them home so stylishly and with a certain amount of calm to it. I really enjoyed that.
Well, I thank you for the recognition. And as you noticed, I was very quiet while you spoke. You were very complimentary. Thank you. A horse race is a very exciting event, as you know. Horse race callers can become excited. Anybody, I would be very excited, of course. However, the overriding goal of a racetrack announcer is to be understood. So it's probably a good idea to reduce your excitement to try to be understood throughout the call. At least that's how I looked at the game. I don't say that I did it better. I would say that I tried real hard to not become too excited.
Marshall, you've made it a point to stay involved with racing. You now work as an official here with the New York Racing Association. Talk about what Marshall Cassidy is doing now in the post-announcing days, so to speak.
Well, for the last few years, I've been working in the placing judges' stand with Sonny Taylor and Ralph Thoreau Jr., and we three look at each race's conclusion, and we determine the order of finish visually, and then we go to the photo finish operation and look at the photograph produced by our man Don Morehouse, and we can determine exactly how a finish is determined by a still frame photograph. And we can determine the first, second, third, and fourth horses in the race, and then we relay that information to the tote company, which then places the results on the board after the race has been made official. So to answer your question specifically, we determine the order of finish, and you have a pari-mutuel ticket that is either good or bad by our decision. Sometimes we have dead heats when one horse is joined by another horse or another two horses on the wire, and there cannot be a separation made, so then we have two or three horses in a dead heat for that position, be it win, place, or show, which multiplies the payoffs and actually multiplies the winners, which is an ironic outcome, but that's what can happen. Placing judges do have an important job to do, and it is limited to the outcome of a race, and we make that determination, who wins, who places, and who shows, and who finishes fourth for purse money.
Well, Marshall, you have always represented the sport of thoroughbred racing with the utmost class and dignity, and you certainly have done that on this program here today as well. We can't thank you enough for the visit, and all the best moving forward, my friend, and we'll look forward to talking with you again soon. Enjoy this Travers Stakes Day.
Thank you very much for taking me down memory lane. It's been a lot of fun. I hope you have a great day, and today's race should be a really good one.
Thanks, Marshall. Marshall Cassidy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, just to hear that voice. And, boy, when he got into kind of the, I won't call it the shtick, but when he got into really that rhythm of describing different elements of those races, Jude, it just kind of did take you back, you know, just so special.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my all-time favorites. Really enjoyed his calls, and it was great to hear that race that you played before he came on, and makes me want to go back and listen to some more.
Well, a great way to begin this Equine Forum on this Travers Stakes morning. We're going to step away for our weekly Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every single Saturday morning by the Lexus store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty in Lexington, Kentucky. When we return, we're going to hear from, well, somebody who drives a Lexus. That's jockey Javier Castellano, the five-time Travers winner. You'll hear that interview coming up next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This is the story of one of the once-living legends of the American turf who, unhappily to relate, outlived his legendary status into an ever-lengthening twilight of economic hardship and poor health, and who, at the age of 69 in a Jacksonville, Oregon nursing home, met the Grim Reaper after a prolonged illness on August 16, 1968. For many years, he had been a hanger-on at New York racetracks, waiting for that one more chance which never came, and dreaming of the glory of the 1920s when he was, quite literally, the toast of Broadway. In that golden age of sport, he was to thoroughbred racing what Babe Ruth was to baseball, Bobby Jones to golf, Bill Tilden to tennis, Red Grange to football, Jack Dempsey to boxing, and Johnny Weissmuller to swimming. Each was the symbol and the very epitome of their particular sport, their names household words. He first saw the light of day, did our man of the day, so to speak, in Groton, South Dakota, in November 13, 1898, of Norwegian ancestry, and he grew up on a ranch in American Falls, Idaho, where he took to riding horses as naturally as the proverbial duck takes to water. He rode his first official race on January 25, 1918, and won, the first of 968 wins in over 3,600 mounts, who earned nearly $3 million, an enormous amount in that day and age. His lifetime winning percentage was 26%, remarkable. In 1919, his contract was purchased by Commander J.K.L. Ross, for whose Canadian-based stable he rode such stars as Milkmaid, Billy Kelly, and Sir Barton. He later rode for Harry Sinclair's Rancoca stable, and it was in the silks of this stable that his star shot across the heavens of thoroughbred racing with meteoric rapidity. He led the jockey list with Money One in 1921, the year he won the Belmont aboard Grey Lag. And in 1923, the year he won the Derby and Belmont with a leg up on John E. Madden's Zev. His 1923 records of 39 stakes wins and nearly $570,000 in purses were to stand as riding records for more than 20 years. He had a nasty spill at Saratoga in 1924 and a gallstone operation as well, sidelining him for some 8 months. He had trouble getting mounts on his return to the saddle, but to get the mount on Flying Ebony in the Derby, he did, and he won in the slop on that one at Churchill. That same year, he won the Belmont while aboard Mad Play. In 1927, he won the Belmont on Chance Shot for owner Joseph Widener, president of Belmont Park. It was largely under Widener's aegis that he was restored to good standing in March of 1928, after he had been suspended and banned from all tracks in the fall of 1927 for his ride on Bateau in the Pimlico Futurity. In spite of that suspension, he was a leading money-winning rider of 1927. After reinstatement, he had the stomach and weight problems, and he subsequently hung up his tack, as it were, to race and train horses. He encountered financial difficulty in that venture and ultimately bowed to creditors by dispersing his stable in 1929. He came out of retirement to ride for William Woodward Sr. in 1930. That year, he was aboard Gallant Fox, who chalked up a triple crown. That year's win in the Belmont was his fifth in that event, both rider and horse retired in 1931. Our man came out of retirement for a second time to ride in 1932, chalking up 13 wins. And then, final retirement and the beginning of a long road to abject obscurity. He refused all offers to ride in Europe, and had a brief fling as a chanteur at the Stork Club in New York, plus a stint in radio and as a movie producer, none of those with success. In 1938, when back in the game as a trainer, he saddled stagehand for wins in both the Santa Anita Derby and the Santa Anita Handicap. He was that season's leading money-winning trainer. In 1944, he turned to breeding, but that proved to be a disastrous venture. He once said, quote, "Money and me are incompatible." In 1953, at the age of 55, he got himself down to riding weight and had 10 mounts and won one of those. That victory, to phenomenal acclaim, I might add, was at the old Jamaica racetrack on Long Island, October 14, 1953. The effort to make weight had taken its toll, and from then on until he left New York for Oregon, he lived in a donated room over a Long Island restaurant, eating with friends who relived his past glories. The story of this paragon of saddlesmiths, replete with its ecstasies and agonies, its apogees and perigees, its zeniths and its nadirs of human accomplishment and endeavor, as though reaching out for that one final straw of recognition, is indeed a most sad commentary. It does not detract one single scintilla from the composite accomplishment of this man, accomplishments which stamped him indelibly in giant letters on the pages of racing lore. Our subject of this dissertation was immortalized through the pen of Damon Runyon in the 1920s, Runyon, often watching him ride Pendennode in testimony to this man titled A Guy Named Sandy. He was Earl Sandy.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the Godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
What is it about Tony's steaks and seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Power.
But Frosted has won with ease in the Whitney.
Passion.
It was Creator and Destined right on the wire, and Iran Ortiz raised his whip in victory.
Performance.
Time and Motion's got her. Time and Motion has upset Catch a Glimpse in the Lake Placid.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, the two-time champion sire, is once again the leading general sire in 2016. Tappet has produced 17 Grade 1 winners, 50 graded stakes winners, 13 millionaires, and more than $100 million in lifetime progeny earnings, and was the leading commercial sire at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Selected Yearling Sale by both average and median. Find your Tappet yearling at the upcoming Keeneland September Sale. When you purchase a Tappet yearling, your chance of getting a graded stakes winner is the highest. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario.
Hi, this is Jockey John Cork.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
American Pharoah has lost the lead at the top of the stretch. Frosted on the outside is now in front, but American Pharoah is battling on from the inside. He's showing all this fight with 1 furlong to run. And here on the far outside comes Keen Ice with a late threat. American Pharoah put away Frosted. He has to deal with Keen Ice. Keen Ice has got him. Keen Ice has won the Travers over American Pharoah in a dramatic upset. Frosted was third and Upstart was fourth in a final time of 201.57 seconds. The Graveyard of Champions has claimed another.
Larry Colmus with the call of last year's Travers and American Pharoah, unable to hold off Keen Ice in the final strides. Of course, Keen Ice ridden by jockey Javier Castellano. That was his record 5th victory in the Travers. He's actually won it the last 2 years, and he's looking for the hat trick later today aboard Destin for trainer Todd Pletcher. We'll see if he can pull it off at 5:44 Eastern time, and you will hear that exclusive coverage right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Visit horseracingradio.net for more information on that coverage today, and hrnnespanol.com for all of the information on our Spanish broadcast of the races today from 3 to 6 Eastern time. He's Jude Feld. I'm Mike Penna. We are trackside here at Saratoga, getting you set for a very busy afternoon of thoroughbred racing and a stellar afternoon. Jude, you look back on that day a year ago. We were in this same position when American Pharoah, Larry Coleman said, showing all this fight, looked like he could hold off Keen Ice, but it just came up just a little bit short.
Well, the pace scenario didn't really suit American Pharoah. I'm not so sure the travel suited him. Keen Ice, that was the last time he won. They probably should have retired him that day. You know, that's what happens in racing. You don't win them all, and even horses like American Pharoah get beat once in a while. We were also there when Zenyatta got beat in the Breeders' Cup Classic. But I was listening to an interview of Bob Baffert with Christine Oliveris earlier this week, and Bob Baffert said something that I thought was kind of interesting. He said, "I like the Travers. I like that race." And I thought to myself, how could he possibly like that race? But I think what he meant was, I want to win that race.
Yeah.
And he's bringing two horses here today to try to win it.
He's only won it once, point given, his only win in the race. He's always seemed to come up a little bit short in this one, but maybe today is the day that Bob finally gets win number two.
Yeah, well, I think it's really important to him to avenge that loss somehow. And, you know, trainers, they get these little ideas in their head, and I really want to win that race. I can't believe that horse got beat last year. And, of course, Point Given was a very frustrating horse for Bob as well, not winning the Kentucky Derby and then going on to win everything else. So he's going to be all out today, I think.
So is Javier Castellano, who, again, rides Destin. And earlier this week I had the chance to visit with Javier and ask him about those five wins and look ahead to this year's Travers Stakes.
Tell me the first thing that pops into your head when I say these words. Javier Castellano, five-time Travers Stakes winner.
It's unbelievable the way you say, you know, because you don't realize this. That's a kind of, I mean, remarkable achievement. By the time you go through it, the moment, you know, every single is Travis, and you don't realize it till you get to the point, say, you back up a little bit, oh, my God, win fifth. Travis, I mean, it's amazing because you work so hard, you put a lot of into to get to this point. And you go through the moment, you go through the emotion, and you don't realize it to the point when you back up a little bit and sit down and think of what I did in the past. That's what I feel right now. When I went my first Travis, I was really excited. I couldn't beat it that time, American Pharoah. And after that, I won the race. I was excited. Wow, great race. It's so happy. But you go through the motion, you still didn't realize it. That's for real.
Let's look back on those five victories. And let's start with Bernardini. That was your first one back in 2006. Take me through that race. And when I say the name Bernardini in Travers Stakes, what thoughts come to mind?
It was amazing. I really enjoyed my moment because in the past I rode a horse in the Preakness. And I win my first triple crown, and I couldn't celebrate. It was different emotions because Barbara got hurt that day. And tried to celebrate one part, and the other one, it was kind of sad because see Barbara on the ground. But then you go to the Travis, this different scenario, different moment. You win the first Travis ever in your career. I say, wow, I enjoy. I'm so excited, happy. I couldn't sleep that night. I said, I don't know if I can do it again. Well, at least I have my record, you know, winning the Travis for at least one. And it was great. It was a great moment with Bernardini. It was a great horse to be around and very fortunate.
Do you remember the feeling when you crossed the finish line that day and what that was like for you?
I don't remember the passing wire, but I do remember turn of horn. I remember something like right now. I go through my mind, the horse, he got great acceleration. When I asked the horse to go for it, he responded so quick and so fast. I was so excited to win my first Travis.
It's a huge crowd here on Travers Day. You said you mentioned turning for home and what that moment was like. Do jockeys hear the crowd and feel the excitement and feed off of that like a lot of athletes will do?
Yeah, absolutely. We heard the song. especially traffic. You know, a lot of people around and turn off home, a lot of people laying out by the rail, by the 3 April. And you heard these people screaming. I don't know if they're screaming me or screaming somebody else, but I say, wow, does it feel so good? And especially when you ask the horse, it responded. And you knew in that time, I'm going to go my first travel. It was amazing.
4 years later, you come back with a Fleet Express. You win your second Travers that year. Tell me about that day.
It was truly, truly emotional because it was so tough. It was a ride like a dead heat photo finish. And you don't know if I win the race, I pass the wire, and it was good and bad because those moments you want to know the answer right away. It takes a little while to realize who won the race. And I come back, and I remember I see Jose Lescano in his face. He looked at me. We all really intense, and we don't know what to do. But at the same time, I want to go back and see the board. And everything go through my mind. I hope I can win the race. I hope. And, of course, when they popped the numbers and my number was in top, and I feel so bad to look at Jose Lescano because, you know, you don't want to be in that position. You know, it could be myself and be in that spot. But, hey, that's the whole race. It's competitive. We both put a lot of effort to win and be very lucky to win the race.
All right, take me through the next year. Stay Thirsty comes along in 2011. Tell me about that day.
I was pretty much confident with the horse. They picking top the horse. It was 2-1. I think I knew that horse he can do it. And it was a small field. I think I had a lot of confidence. I think I knew I can get it done this race. And mentally, I was very possible. I think I knew it's going to win the race. And it's the kind of horse you have to ride. And I rode kind of aggressive a little bit with him, and it ran amazing that day.
2014, it was VE Day, your second win for trainer Jimmy Jerkins.
Wow, that horse, nobody expected to. Jimmy Jerkins had two horses in that time, and they had the favorite. My horse come from behind horse. I give you a lot of opportunity to let him develop and let him get this try. And I believe me, I rode that race to give it the best opportunity to the horse to finish. And turn for home, and I say, oh, I think I have a chance. And when I ask the horse, he responded quick, and I say, I'm going to get it. Turn for home. And the top of the stretch, I ride so hard, right. When I see those two horses, they start backing out slowly, and just to ride in the wire. But so great acceleration, the way he did it, the horse. And I knew I won the race. As soon as the wire, I celebrate. And it was kind of close. Then I come by and see the replay. I said, wow, can you imagine I would be get there in that moment? It would be awful. But, I mean, I knew I can feel I won the race when that great acceleration he did, the great kick, his strong, powerful kick he did. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Jimmy's dad, late Hall of Famer Alan Jerkins, was known as the Giant Killer because of all the upsets that he was able to pull off, many of those here at Saratoga. Last year, you got to be the Giant Killer, knocking off Triple Crown winner American Pharoah with Keen Ice. Take me through that race.
I remember every time, the more I see the paper, I say, I can be the horse. I like to be passer. I like to be, but nothing wrong with second place behind American Pharoah. I say, let me start handicapping. But more I decide, you know what, let me close the program and focus in the race. I'm not going to handicap the race. I just want to give it the best ride of the horse to get something out of there. And when I see Frosty, he went after American Pharoah, and at least somebody had to put pressure. And turn it on, you know, I ride so hard and try to get to me at least second place, because I can see American Pharoah start open up. He start get about 2-3 lanes. I say, I'm not going to catch it, man. It's going to go. But the more getting go far, the more getting closer, the more pass it, I say, but when soon he passes the 16 pole, I say, yes, I got it. And it was a thrill emotion, because to be American Pharoah, one of the best horses, the greatest horses I ever seen in my life.
All right, let's turn our attention to this year for a minute. It's going to be Destin. Comes out of a third-place finish in the Jim Dandy, only beaten about a length and a half. Ran a big, big race. At least I thought he did. How about your thoughts?
Well, Destin, he ran a great race. He came from the Belmont. Such a great race. And now the Jim Dandy was the prey. I like it the way he does every time. You know, every time he performs, he always consistent. You know, he never disappoints. I know it's a big field, 14 horses. I never see anything like that. Before the travel, too many horses together. But this is a whole race you have to ride, and hopefully the horse you put a great performance today.
How does a 14-horse field change your approach when you're getting ready for the Travers?
Everything changes. Sometimes change for good, sometimes change for bad, because a lot of expectation, you know, you handicap the race, you want to put in the better spot in the race. But it's a good crowd, you know, in the first turn, you know, you don't see too many horses usually. I know we get used to 20 horses in Churchilldown. You know, it's a little more wide open here, a little more tight corner. And you have to be aware to put in good spot in the race. Hopefully you have a clean trip. And I think you lean out sometimes a little bit about luck. You have to be a good luck in the trip, and hopefully get it done.
All right, put me in the saddle with you on Saturday afternoon. Without giving away your strategy here on the radio, what's the key to getting win number 6 in the Travers with Destin?
Well, I believe you have to be prepared. You know, hopefully the horse will break good out of the game. Get in good spot. I think the main goal, you get a good spot out of the game. And the first time, you have to be in good position. And I hope the horse start developing himself, because when you ended out too far back, it's hard to pass 14 horses on the phone. You got to be super, super horse to do that. And you don't want to go wide, too, because you lose a lot of ground. I think the key, you get a good position, good spot in the race, hopefully everything will work out.
If he wins on Saturday, are we going to get to see a picture of Javier Castellano holding up 6 fingers?
I hope so. That's what I'm looking for. I never stop dreaming. You know, I want to be one of the best, and they all do it here. They all want to win more races. This is cool about this game. The more you win it, the more you like it, and it's the greater.
Jockey Javier Castellano. My thanks to him for taking the time to talk earlier this week. A little trip down memory lane, looking back on his 5 Travers Stakes victories. Amazing, JT, the way he remembers every detail of all of those races.
Well, it's really funny as we talk to people in racing, and myself included, you may not remember what you had for dinner last night, but you can remember your horses and what they did and how they came up to a race. And to have that experience that Javier's had of 5 Travers winners, it's absolutely outstanding.
And I asked him that question about the picture of holding up 6 fingers. Well, last year, you remember when he came back, he held up his whole hand and he had the 5 fingers up. And there was a famous picture of him coming back to the winner's circle with those 5 fingers. So he's going to have to maybe, you know, put the whip in one hand and kind of try to do 6 fingers this year.
Oh, he'll give the whip to his valet and he'll just go like this.
I loved his line at the end of that interview when he said, the more you win, the more you want it.
Yeah.
Right? It just winning begets winning in this sport.
Yeah, well, it does, and it's an addicting feeling, and that's why so many people spend their lives in it, because that feeling when you hit the winner's circle, whether you're an owner, a trainer, a jockey, it's just a groom, it's unbelievable, because you've spent time, you know, in the sport, you've paid your dues, you've worked hard to get there, and it's a fantastic feeling. And when you win a big race, it really is over the top. I mean, it's just such an exciting event.
We have to get to a commercial break in a minute, but how about Destin this year then? Does he have an opportunity to give Javier number 6?
I don't know. You know, it's not like he's at the top of his game right now. I mean, he's certainly got a chance if he pulls out one of his better races, but I don't know. I think he might have, already done his racing for the year at the top level. It's just my opinion, but he's certainly got a chance. He's a really good horse. He shows up a lot, but he's danced a lot of dances, and I'm thinking maybe somebody a little fresher might be better.
Well, Javier, like all of our guests who appear on the program, going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the exclusive provider of the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle and the official apparel of horse racing. You can wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. We're back with more. Get you set for a busy second half of the program here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home for Saturdays at Saratoga and the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich Shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
Ed's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Bred for greatness and a brilliant Grade 1 winner on the track, Airdrie Studs Creative Cause is giving every indication that his may be a very special future at stud. Already represented by the undefeated and dominant Landalucy Stakes winner, the one we waited for, Creative Cause currently sits second on the first crop sire list, and with impressive maiden special weight winners throughout the nation, appears poised to lead this banner stallion crop in 2016 and beyond. Airdrie Studs Creative Cause. Think about it.
Maryland breads are your formula for success. In 1989, Maryland Bread safely kept won Saratoga's Grade 1 test stakes with a final running time of 121 and 2/5 seconds. The test was one of 8 wins and 9 starts at 3 for safely kept, who would be voted that year's Eclipse Award-winning sprinter. Maryland Breads run with the best. Look for them in the winner's circle at racetracks all over the world and watch for them at the sales. Better stallions, better mares, Maryland Breads.
Make sure your horses shine at the sales with the highest quality hay and straw from Washington Hay Company. At Washington Hay Company, you'll find beautiful bright straw, top quality Timothy hay, and their soft leafy alfalfa all from Washington State. And their unparalleled personal service ensures they'll be by your side every step of the way at your most important time of the year. So let Washington Hay worry about the hay, straw, and shavings while you present your horse. Contact Brad Green today and be sure to visit Washington Hay Company on Facebook.
A multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire sprinter.
It's going to be very close at the finish, and here's the wire. It's Palace, the winner.
The best son of leading sire City Zip.
And it will be Palace, the winner by 3/4 of a length. And Palace dazzles here and wins by 3.5 lengths.
Palace, new for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Dedicated to the improvement of thoroughbred breeding and racing. A single promise that has never changed, but one that has evolved to meet the needs of equine athletes and their owners through continual innovation, commitment, and leadership. From fan development to safety, from aftercare to cutting-edge technology, the Jockey Club has proudly served the thoroughbred industry since 1894. Visit jockeyclub.com for more information.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch, and it is Connect and Gift Box, and they turn for home together. Connect continues to lead the way. He's got a neck in front. Gift Box fighting him from the rail. Forever Doro is 4 lengths back in third. It is still Connect. He won't let Gift Box get by. Connect in front. Gift Box on the inside will be second best to Connect in the hurling. Connect won it by a length over Gift Box. And then it was Forever Doro and Ready Dancer. The final time was 1 minute 48.69 seconds. So the stablemates run 1-2 around here, and Gift Box just could not get by Connect and Johnny V.
Well, Connect and John Velasquez back this afternoon in the 147th Travers, looking to join V.E. Day, who won the Curlin 2 years ago, went on and took the Travers in his next start. We'll see if Connect can pull it off at 5:44 Eastern Time. Mike Pena, Jude Feld, we are trackside here at Saratoga. We are still some, well, just under 9 hours away from that running of the Travers, and our coverage this afternoon, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, right here, SiriusXM Channel 93, affiliates across the country, and streaming worldwide horseracingradio.net, and now exclusively in Spanish on the all-new HRRNEnEspanol.com. You won't want to miss that coverage. Same time, 3 to 6 Eastern this afternoon, Roberto Rodriguez, Eloy Vielma, and Hall of Fame jockey Ramon Dominguez have that call for us later today.
Yeah, those guys are fantastic. Really impressed with their professionalism and their show ability. It's a great show, and looking forward to hanging out with them today.
And because it's available online worldwide at HRRNEnEspanol.com, that means that people in Venezuela, Peru, Chile, Puerto Rico, all over the Caribbean, all over Latin America, and all over the world are able to access that coverage in Spanish just as they can with our English coverage this afternoon at horseracingradio.net. Hey, since it's Travers Day, let's spend a moment talking about Travers winner Stay Thirsty, who now stands at Ashford in Versailles, Kentucky. He is already, how about this, already up to 9 first crop winners, including stakes winner Jocker Justice and graded stakes placed Thirst for Life. And who can forget the debut performance of Ashford stallion Uncle Mo? Jude and I certainly can't. We sat right here in the same position and watched Uncle Mo in one of the more impressive debut victories on the Travers undercard when he got things rolling with his stellar career. And then you have both Giants Causeway and Uncle Mo, who will be represented this afternoon in the Travers by Destin and Lauban, respectively. And Ashford stallion Munnings has Catalina Red in the forego, and I'm a Chatterbox in the personal ensign. Well, looking at Lucky has Money Multiplier. It's all kinds of great things happening with the Ashford Stallions in Versailles, Kentucky. All right, busy second half of the program comes up next. It features trainer Chad Brown at 9 o'clock Eastern. That's right after this short segue. And then Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union will be with us at 9:25 Eastern. And our Right or Wrong segment presented by Sunrise Stallions coming up at right around 9:40 Eastern time. We're back with hour number two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
California Chrome Dortmund head for the wire in an absolute grinner. California Chrome's class has pulled him through.
Joel Rosario's not even asking to go at all. He's in front by 2.5 lengths. And then comes FNX on the outside. A late bid from Comfort down toward the rail. It's upstart. But Frosted has won with ease in the Whitney.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Means Gizmo in front, but here comes Sir Dudley Diggs and Julien Le Barou. Sir Dudley Diggs has hit the front, and Sir Dudley Diggs from Amis Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Mike Smith just shakes the reins at Songbird. Going for broke has made progress up into second inside a family tree, but there's 6 lengths behind Songbird at the 16th pole. It is Songbird, this magnificent filly, winning the Alabama. She is a perfect 10.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Barron and Pontiff, that's Penna and Feld, trackside on an absolutely spectacular morning here in Saratoga Springs. Travers replays playing on the big screen and on the television monitors throughout the facility. The fans have been lined up here at Saratoga since well in advance of 6 o'clock Eastern time this morning. As soon as the gates opened at 7, they came charging in to get the picnic table, to get the place in the grandstand, to find out where they can be positioned to watch the Travers later today at 5:44 Eastern time, that 147th running. It will be contested on a fast main track. The turf course should be on the firm side of things, and we are under robin egg blue skies with plenty of sunshine. And, Jude, what a gorgeous day it's going to be on this Travers Stakes Day.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We've got a helicopter landing in the infield. We had some...
Look at our helicopters here.
Yes, it's here. And it's not for us. It's for the parachuters who just walked by. Looks like we're going to have some parachute show before the races, which is really cool. And last time they did this, one of the parachuters almost hit the rail.
Well, it always amazes me, though, how 99 times out of 100, they are so ridiculously accurate. They hit that mark. They usually land on the turf course, and they hit that mark spot on. It's incredible.
Yeah, really, really talented, and there's several guys and gals going to go up in that helicopter and parachute down. Looking forward to that. We just saw Bernardini win the Travers on the replay. And you heard Javier talk about that. It was really kind of an armchair ride. I don't think he ever hit Bernardini. He just kept drawing away, just actually ran away from his competition.
Well, if you missed that interview with Javier Castellano in the first half of the program, or with legendary race caller Marshall Cassidy, looking back on his favorite memories as a race caller and some of the more memorable Travers that he's been part of, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows right there, horseracingradio.net. And while you're there, you might want to spend a few minutes checking out that trainer talk show from this past week, Jude, because that was something special.
I'll tell you, you know, we've done a lot of trainer talks, and we've done a lot of Hall of Fame trainers during that time, but the one we did with Dwayne Lucas was just outstanding, if I do say so myself.
He was great. And had a chance to sit down with him in the office at his barn.
Yeah, he was just on point the whole time, and it was really nice of him to take an hour out of his day, because he's a very busy guy and he's in his 80s, but he was very gracious with us and very candid, and it was just a magnificent interview. Just to listen to his stories, you're gonna love it if you listen to it, so don't miss out. Download it, pull it up on your computer, do whatever you need to do, and listen to that at some point in the next few weeks, because it's really worth listening to.
Saratoga's leading trainer this meet is trainer Chad Brown. He's never won the Saratoga title, and he's trying to hold off Todd Pletcher here in 2016. Well, Chad has three horses going to the post in this year's Travers, and earlier this week I had the chance to visit with Chad, and I had the chance to talk with him about all three contenders and even look ahead to Lady Eli, who makes her comeback in the Grade 2 Ballston Spa. Here's what Chad had to say earlier today.
Trainer Chad Brown, a native of Saratoga Springs, New York, has trained, at least to date anyways, 999 career winners. By the time this interview airs, very well could be over 1,000. And Chad, I know that that's a very special milestone for you. What comes to mind when you think about that?
All my loyal clients, my staff, particularly my three lead assistant trainers have been with me the longest, George Abreu, Jose Hernandez, and Sheree DeVoe. All really starts with them and all the talented people that work with them that they've lined up for our stable and that they've trained and put a lot of hours in and worked as a team. That's the thing that comes to mind. And, of course, all of the brave horses we've had over the years that give it their all in the afternoon. It's a wonderful spot to be in. I'm a lucky guy.
With those 999 winners, there's one race that you haven't won yet, and that's the Travers Stakes, which comes up here on Saturday. What is it about the Travers that makes it so difficult?
You know, it's a midsummer derby for a reason. It's the race everybody shoots for. You know, me personally, growing up in the area, the Travers Stakes was always a highlight of the summer for me and my family coming to the track. Such a historic race. You know, it's just, it's at the top of our list. What we want to do as a team is to win this race. Hopefully this year we have a horse good enough to do it.
You talk about coming here with your family. I also grew up an hour from here in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, so this is where I cut my teeth on racing, too. My first Travers was 1989 with Easy Goer. How about yours?
I can't remember to be exact, but I know that ever since I was knee-high, we were coming to the track as a family and going to the Travers, and there's been a lot of memorable ones and just a dream come true even to participate in this race at this level with three really live horses. And like I said, it would just be awesome if one of them was good enough to do it.
A couple of your mentors, Hall of Famer Shug McGahee and the late Hall of Famer Bobby Frankel, have won the Travers. Shug did it three times. Bobby did it with Medaglia d'Oro in 2007. Do you ever go back and look at the way that they approached this race, or even go back and talk to Shug and bounce some ideas off of him?
No, I haven't. Luckily, I was working for Bobby when we had Medaglia d'Oro in the barn and got to watch him prepare that horse. And hopefully, I like to think I learned a few things along the way. You have to first have the horse and he was a great horse to work around. Like I said, we have three horses that don't have quite their credentials that a few of the other ones have, already being Grade 1 winners in the field. However, you know, three horses I think have a bright future that are still developing. I think their best races are ahead of them. I feel like all three of my horses are going to run their best career race on Saturday. And whether that's good enough remains to be seen.
Well, let's talk about those three horses. We'll start with Connect and Gift Box, since they were only a length apart in that most recent outing. Connect is a horse that's very, very talented, 3-for-4 lifetime, the only defeat coming in that maiden race. How'd you get him beat first time out?
Running too short in distance. Connect is a horse that always showed a lot of promise as soon as he came into the barn very early in the summer last year. He had some minor issues along the way. By the time we got him ready to run, the only race in front of me was a 6-furlong race. And I really just wanted to get him started, knowing that I had a potential Derby horse, I felt. So, unfortunately, it was a little too short for him, and he exited the race with a small chip in one of his ankles that had to be taken out by Dr. Bramlage. So we just took him off the Derby trail. The owner, Paul Pompas, patient, experienced guy, he's had a lot of good horses for a number of years, and he knows how to be patient, how to manage them for the long run. So we came up with a plan pointing towards the Travers at that point, even as a maiden. And we were just talking about it yesterday of, you know, finally a plan worked. You know, we're talking about this horse over the winter as a maiden, talking Travers. It sounds ridiculous at the time, but we've always thought that of this horse. I mean, we worked backwards from this race back then.
How about Gift Box? He was actually favored over Connect in that Curlin Stakes. Ends up second, as I mentioned, beaten just a length. But what's his story?
You know, Gift Box is a horse that, we've always had high hopes for. He showed a lot of promise as a two-year-old. He fortunately got to run here at Saratoga last year and made it all the way to the Remsen, where he ran incredibly. You know, this horse lost his way down in Florida. I took him down there thinking very much Derby trail, and he just wasn't training right down there. He kept having little minor setbacks, nothing terrible. He never had to go home, but Florida just didn't agree with him. So we made a difficult decision to send him back to New York late in the winter and see if we just put him back to his home base of Belmont, if that could kickstart him, and it did. And another wonderful, experienced, patient owner, and Mr. Will Farish, that said, hey, forget about the Derby. Do the right thing by the horse. Maybe we'll have a Travers horse. And this plan worked as well. Just took our time. We brought him along with stuff he could handle. We feel like we're bringing him to the Travers now, ready to peak.
Yeah, and with his past performance lines, you look at it, he was third in his debut, then first, then third, then first, and then second last time out. So maybe first again on Saturday. Who knows?
I hope that cycle is played right into our hands Saturday, and he's ready to get back on the win end.
How about my man Sam, maybe the most experienced of the three?
Yeah, he did make it to the Derby. He was a late bloomer and had to play a little bit of catch-up, but he ran so well in the bluegrass, we thought it was worth a shot to run him in the Derby. And, you know, he ran okay. He wasn't good enough that day. I thought he got a pretty good trip. You know, he split the field and needed a little time to recover after that race. He was quite tired after the Derby. So we have the local prep over the track and allow and trace. Disappointing that he got beat, but he got a lot out of that race. He's a difficult horse to train off a little layoff because he doesn't really give it to you in the mornings. I can't get him as fit as I'd like off a layoff, this horse, because he's a bit lazy in the mornings. That race really tightened him up. I know he's a long shot. He's going to need things to go his way pace-wise up front, but I think he deserves a shot in the race the way he's training.
You're no stranger to saddling multiple horses in big races. So you have three in the Travers. What's it like for a trainer walking in there with three major players? You have three different jockeys, three sets of jockey instructions, and then you have to watch all three horses during the race. Take me through that process. What's it like?
You have to be extremely organized. And like I said earlier, I have, you know, unbelievable staff I work with every day. So we have a plan. We normally get the instructions or conversation with the jockeys out of the way in the days prior to the race. Or the morning of the race. And then just putting three saddles on three horses, you better be organized in the paddock. And like I said, I have the staff to do it. And you know, it's one of those situations where each horse individually belongs to run in this race. And that's always the way I approach it with big races. If I run multiple horses, it's because each individual horse, I feel, deserves the right to run. And my clients don't have a problem with it.
How do you keep an eye on all three during the race when you're watching it?
That can be challenging at times, but, you know, it's what we do. So we keep an eye on everything.
Well, good luck in the Travers. Maybe another big storyline, maybe the storyline of the day, could turn out to be Lady Eli, who you bring back, of course, undefeated, a perfect 6-for-6. She hasn't started since winning the Belmont Oaks Invitational last year. The bout of laminitis, actually in both feet. Tell me about what's been going on with Lady Eli, and take me back to that day when you first got the news.
Yeah, so many ups and downs with this filly. It's hard to believe it's been this long now since she first was stricken with this scary disease. Thankfully, she's made a full recovery. She's training outstanding. It's been a long way back. It took a lot of teamwork from a lot of talented people along the way. Veterinarians, her podiatrist, Brian Fraley, who's been just such an important part of this too. He's been shoeing her monthly and making little adjustments along the way. And, you know, really a learning experience for me and my staff about how to deal with this and what's possible if you get the right team together. And the most valuable member of the team is Lady Eli. She has the will to come back.
Yeah, and of course you lost a member of that team. Passed away, was actually killed in a motor vehicle accident riding his bike in Vermont this past year, and he was an instrumental part of her recovery in the early stages of that success. That had to be very difficult.
Yeah, it was. Dr. Bob Agnew, he is tragically killed last summer, and he was one of the first, him along with Brian Fraley, they were the first two podiatrists to rush to the side of Lady Eli, and I'm sure that Dr. Bob Agnew's efforts contributed to saving Lady Eli's life, along with Dr. Fraley. So, if this filly, her just getting back here, is really a tribute to him. And if she wins, surely we'll dedicate that win to him and his family. He's without him, we wouldn't be here.
Things in those early stages were very touch and go, and a lot of people weren't knowing if she was going to make it or not. How difficult was that for you?
It was difficult because, you know, I'm trying to assemble the team, make the final decisions about what we're going to do, knowing that it's uncharted territory for myself as well. We dealt with laminitis, but not at this level, and trying to balance the feelings of the clients that own the horse, led by Saul Kuhman and Jay Hanley, you know, manage the morale of my staff. You know, obviously, Lady Eli first and foremost, what's in her best interest, racing aside. And I'd like to think along the way that as a team we've made a lot of the right decisions here, and you know, and it's time to go. And I'm under no pressure to run the horse from anybody. I feel the horse really wants to run, so I'm going to let her run. And it's what adds to it as well is the fact that she's undefeated, and it's a tall order off you know, over a year layoff after recovering from laminitis, and you have an undefeated champion, Breeders' Cup champion. You know, you surely don't want to put her in a position where you think she's vulnerable to get beat, but at the same time, it's horse racing, and you're going to have to lead them over sooner or later. And we've been in this position before with a horse like Awesome Feather off of another year layoff with a tendon injury that's undefeated, a Breeders' Cup champion. And we weren't afraid to run her, and she came back and won and continued on her record all the way to her last race. So, in a way, we've been here before, and we're not afraid to run her.
Will there be some anxious moments when she loads into the starting gate?
Absolutely. I don't like to think of myself getting nervous anymore over big races, believe it or not, just because we've grown accustomed to it. We don't take it for granted, but I've come to the realization that certain things are out of my hands once they go in the starting gate. So this race, though, is a little different. So I'll be a little nervous when they load her in there.
You're always great about giving the horses credit. You've mentioned Lady Eli. It's all about her and her tremendous recovery and how strong she's been. Were there times during this past year where you said, boy, I just don't see any way she makes it back?
No, I never felt that way. I was never negative about it. When I first got her into Florida, back down to Florida over the around December, there was a little period of time there when I first started her back where I was unsure. By February, I'll tell you, I felt certain she was making it back. I didn't know when, but early on when we started galloping this filly, the way she was moving, the fact that her feet x-ray perfectly normal, her attitude, everything about her body language, I knew it would be a long road, but that was the one stage where I really felt at some point in time this filly will run.
What is it about her that makes her so special?
She has such a strong will, a dominant attitude that she just refuses to lose anything she does. And it's remarkable. I've never in my life worked around a horse like her. Never. She's so unique. How strong, how brave she is, how talented she is. Her overall makeup, I've never seen it before. I'm not sure I'll see it again.
Well, Saturday could be a very special day for you with the Travers, with Lady Eli. Could be a very emotional day, too. So bring your handkerchief with you.
Thank you. I will do.
Good luck.
All right, trainer Chad Brown, who has 17 horses entered on this Travers Day program, joining us earlier this week, talking about the three in the Travers, talking about Lady Eli. And, Jude, for so many people, the Travers is going to be the signature event here today. But for others, it's going to be all about Lady Eli in the race following the Travers as she takes on seven rivals in that Grade 2 Balston Spa.
Yeah, it was really disappointing that the racing department didn't put that race before the Travers so we could cover it. I just can't understand why you'd run a short field with Flincher, who's going to be 1-9 as part of your pick four sequence when you got a competitive race like the Balston Spa and you put that on after the races. But hey, they didn't put me in charge of the racing department here, so I guess I can't complain too much.
Well, we'll get to ask Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union his thoughts on that matter and, of course, on the Travers Stakes and Lady Eli. We'll do that when we come back on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti, the seven-time Grade 1 winner and earner of more than $6 million, is now a classic producing sire with his first crop.
Sir Dudley Diggs and Julien Le Parou. Sir Dudley Diggs has hit the front, and Sir Dudley Diggs from Amiz Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
In addition to Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs, Gio Ponti is also represented by the exciting Bob Baffert trainee, Drayfong.
But Drayfong is well clear at the 16th pole. A talented colt. 2 for 2 this campaign. Drayfong by 6 lengths.
And Castleton Lion stallion Justin Phillip retired sound after competing in 23 graded stakes, winning 11 of those, including this dominating performance in the Grade 1 AG Vanderbilt at Saratoga.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by 2.
Justin Phillip's first yearlings enter the sales ring this year. For more information, visit CastletonLions.com.
And they're off in New York. The premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the Spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair strips. FlairStrips.com.
Grade 1 winner Data Link by world-renowned sire Warfront. Data Link scored in the prestigious Grade 1 Makers 46 Mile at Keeneland. Then set a new course record in the Grade 2 Monmouth Stakes. With a pedigree free of Mr. Prospector in the first four generations, Data Link is the perfect outcross option. His first weanlings turned heads, selling well above the stud fee. Data Link at Claiborne Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But there's six lengths behind Songbird at the 16th pole. It is Songbird, this magnificent filly, winning the Alabama. She is a perfect 10.
Champion Songbird did it again this past Saturday at the Spa. The daughter of Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro ran her record to a perfect 10-4-10 with an emphatic win in the historic Grade 1 Alabama. And that brilliant victory is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro is ranked among the nation's elite sires once again in 2016 by number of Grade 1 winners, graded winners, and black type winners. Since graded racing began, no filly ever amassed six Grade 1 wins faster than the unbeaten, unbeatable Medaglia d'Oro filly, Songbird. In addition to Champion Songbird, Medaglia d'Oro is the sire of Horse of the Year, Rachel Alexandra, 2016 Grade 1 Don Handicap winner, Emshuish, a winner at the highest level on both dirt and turf, and Golden Slipper hero, Vancouver. Just three of the 14 total Grade 1 winners produced by Medaglia d'Oro. To learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Jose, I put him on his first graded stakes horse in 2013, first graded stakes winner. So I had a relationship there with him with Marino. So the kid's riding really high right now. He's been having a good year. So, yeah, so I mean, it's, yeah, this is exactly what the instructions were. I told him to just walk the dog and, you know, turn the cat loose, turn it home. And obviously, they let me slow the clock down to 49 and put him to sleep and hit the snooze button at the quarter pole, and apparently they never heard the alarm.
Trainer Eric Guillot, always a great soundbite, and another couple from Eric Guillot right there. Walk the dog and turn the cat loose and hit the snooze button and they never heard the alarm. That was in the Jim Dandy with Lauban, a maiden who won that race. A maiden no more. He's back as a Grade 2 winner in today's Traverse Stakes. 5:44 Eastern is the post. You'll hear it exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network beginning at 3 o'clock Eastern time. That coverage available in English and Spanish. Check it all out, horseracingradio.net and hrrnenespanol.com. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, trackside, gorgeous day here in Saratoga. Tim Wilkin is with the Albany Times-Union. He has covered Saratoga racing for many, many years, and he's been a popular guest on this program for the past several. Timmy, happy Travers Day, my friend.
Happy Travers Day to you guys. Where's Stabile?
In bed.
Yeah, he said he was going to come out and see you, and then last night, at the last minute before he left the house, he said, the heck with him, I'm not coming out. Well, at least I'm paraphrasing a bit.
Well, the heck with Stabile.
That's right. Yeah, he can't make an effort to get out here early and see you.
He's now dead to me.
That's it.
The big A is done. Hey, when you were playing that bit from Gio, I think Lauban is now going to win the race because I think Gio was feeding him some of that gumbo yesterday. And I don't know if you guys were over there.
No, did you go?
I went over there and tried some. That stuff has quite a kick. If Lauban had some of that stuff, he might set a world record in the Travers because that stuff was potent.
Did he put any curses on any of the other connections with any of the voodoo dolls that he has at his barn?
All of them. Every single one of them. I mean, I'm waiting for him to put one on Chris K.
Come on, he's taking all Chris K's money up here right now. He doesn't want to do that.
No, he doesn't. You know, it's, you guys talked, we all Travers, and, well, first, when you guys were talking about the Lady Eli race,
yeah,
I think they should run that on Sunday because there is no stakes race, graded stakes race on Sunday. It's going to be the race after the Travers. No one's going to stick around for it.
Right.
I mean, because people just pour out of here after the Travers, and it'd be a shame if they don't stick around to see Lady Eli because, you know, if she runs like she's been working, she could, it could be a nice special performance. You know, comeback story of many years in horse racing.
Well, you know, it is a good race, and she's not the only good filly in there.
No, she's not.
It's just amazing how, you know, in they always want to screw around with the race order, yeah, in order to get better handle, and they've, yeah, totally blown the pick four. They've totally left out one of the best races of the day.
Because because it's grade two.
It's grade two. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense.
What would be the thought process and the logic of putting it after the Travers? To me, it doesn't make any sense. But
zero.
It's because it's a grade two. I mean, if they're going to do that, I say run it on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, let
Lady Eli headline Sunday.
Sure.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
But Chris K didn't ask me, and I'm not even sure if he knows who Lady Eli is.
Seven stakes races on the program today. Six of those are grade ones. Win and you're in. Breeders' Cup action abound with four win and you're in races here today. Timmy, the program doesn't get much stronger than what we have here today.
It's an awesome card. I mean, if you're a horse player, even if you're not a horse player, you're going to see some fabulous racing up here. And, you know, you just look at, I mean, the Travers itself it might be one of the best betting Travers in years. I mean, I studied that race for a couple hours yesterday, and I still don't know if I'm even close. I mean, it's just a very – it could be an intimidating race for some people. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, 14 horses scheduled to go, but then we had the one scratch yesterday of Mahesto, who spiked a fever, not going to go. So we're down to 13, but you're right. I spent a long time looking at it yesterday as well, and it is difficult to try to narrow it down to just a couple.
I mean, I think you can make a case for 11 of them.
Yeah,
I mean, I really do. I mean, the only ones I'm tossing are Dallas Stewart's Forever D'Oro and the Russian.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce his name.
Right. Yeah, Mikhail. Is that
Mikhail? He's a nice guy. I was over talking to him. He really a super nice guy.
Really?
And he told me that he did. He had an upset, I think, at Gulfstream. He had a horse that paid $100. But he knows he's in pretty deep here. And, you know, he said he was a winner just being here. You know, he's also got Applicator and the Sword Dancer, and but yeah, those would be my two.
Those in the Sword Dancer having to tackle Flincher, that's a tough assignment.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he could be going back to Florida with two last place finishes.
Yeah,
but you can make a case for just about every other horse in the Travers.
How fitting would it be if Bob Baffert were to somehow find a way to get it done, especially with a horse named American Freedom
after what happened last year?
Yeah, with American Pharaoh.
I mean, he's very. I remember Bob at the Derby was saying how high he was on American Freedom because he ran in the Pat Day Mile, even though he stumbled out of the gate and didn't run very well. But he was saying that week that he thought that American Freedom was the best three-year-old on the grounds.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, he is fast. I mean, he's going to be part of the pace. And, you know, his other horse, Harrogate, who is, gosh, who knows how good he might be, making just his fifth start, first grade at stake. He's never been in a field this big. I think his total number of opponents in his first four races was like 19 horses, maybe.
Right.
I mean, but he's got Bob really thinks he's got a lot of talent, too. But he's got the other inside post. And, you know, so he says, Bob says he starts a little slower than American Freedom out of the gate, which could hurt him coming out, you know, if he gets somebody on a wall of horses early. So, I mean, I have Bob's horse, American Freedom, fourth.
Music blaring in the background. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. The Big A's theme song this morning.
That's his theme song?
What do you think?
Isn't it something from New Kids on the Block?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I'd like to see the Big A dancing to this one.
Oh, we saw him last night. He was dancing last night.
Was he? Yeah,
that's a sight to see.
He was making risotto and dancing in the kitchen last night.
Yeah.
It was a sight to see. We should have periscoped.
400 pounds moving in every different direction.
How was the risotto?
Oh, it was delicious.
Outstanding.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Well, everyone's got to be good at something.
Yeah, he doesn't mean risotto.
Well, I've never gotten any of that. Another reason for me not to like it.
Yeah, anything pertaining to food he's pretty good with.
Very cheesy.
I'm just shocked he's not here. You know?
He's very
disappointing.
He's got a show to do.
Yeah. He'll be part of our coverage team this afternoon, but he didn't see it as a priority to get out here and greet you this morning when he came on the show.
All right.
Very disappointing.
That's okay.
Talking with Tim Wilkin of the Albany Times Union here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tim, how about the favorite, the morning line favorite in the Travers today, Exaggerator? People say, oh, it's a fast track. He's not going to be as good. Look, he's run some big races on fast tracks, too.
He has. Keith
one of the DeSormos.
Keith DeSormo was talking yesterday, and you know, I asked him about the perception that he needs an off track, And he's like, you know, I'm laughing all the way to the bank when people talk to me about that. He says he doesn't need an off track as much as he needs a pace to run at. And he should get it here. I mean, a big concern with them when Exaggerator first got here was his works. They were very concerned that he wasn't finishing in his works.
Yeah.
And Keith attributed that to the track. He said, you know, in the mornings, he says, with all the horse traffic on here and it was not a lot of moisture in it, it got pretty cuppy. And Exaggerator was not finishing his works. But his last work, you know, as he said, things changed. He says he finished really well, and he says he couldn't be more confident going into this race. I mean, you know, he's one of, what, two horses in this race that has a grade one.
Yeah.
And he's got, what, three of them? You know, this is, he's a serious racehorse. I mean, he is the horse to beat. It's not like it's he's going to come out here and look at the fast track and, you know, be up the track.
Right.
I mean, I think that, yeah, he's a very dangerous horse, but, you know, I'm not going to pick the favorite in a 13-horse field.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to probably, you know, downgrade the Haskell for him a little bit, because it definitely promoted him, there's no question. Every time he gets on a muddy track, I mean, he just seems to be one of those horses that absolutely loves to run in the mud.
Yeah.
And then I think you have to promote American Freedom, because that surface might have been okay for him, but the way the race set up and everything, it really didn't help him any. So it's an interesting handicapping puzzle, and I totally agree with you that it's so wide open. Every person that you ask will give you a different horse name. You know, we talked about Baffert's other horse, and Jeff Siegel loves him, says you'll never get 10-1 on him ever again. After the Travers, it's Chalk City from there on in. So, and you know, Jeff Siegel's one of the sharpest guys in our game. So, you know, when you have everybody that really follows the sport and has been following these horses all along, yeah. And everybody gives you a different horse to bet on, it's really a tough race, obviously.
Let me ask you this question, because, Timmy, you mentioned Exaggerator just needing a pace to run at, and you said he should get that here today. Well, would that also benefit Belmont Stakes winner Creator, who before the Jim Dandy, Steve Asmussen took the time to visit with us and said, hey, this is just a prep for the Travers. We know he's going to be better going longer distances just as he was in the Belmont. Wouldn't that benefit him too?
You would think so. I was talking to Elliot Walden yesterday about Creator, and he said he's not going to sugarcoat. He said in the Jim Dandy he was just awful. He just did not run his race.
Yep.
Which is a concern, because they don't know if he doesn't like the track. I mean, he's usually shows up wherever he goes, but he did not lift a leg in the Jim Dandy. And yes, if he gets a pace, he should benefit from that too. But I'm not sold on him. I don't know if he likes Saratoga.
Well, I'll tell you one thing: there is absolutely no way, and Elliot Walden should know this, that if they go 49 to the half,
true,
that Creator's going to win the race.
True. It's,
and I, like I always say, when a horse like Leoban goes wire to wire, when a horse goes wire to wire, Creator's not going to win, because he's never going wire to wire. And it's just, I think you just throw that race out. I mean, that race, it was a bizarre race. It was a bizarrely run race. And I think you just redline that race. Today's going to be a whole different kettle of fish. You're going to have a bunch of pace. And, you know, unless the track's stone speed, a closer could definitely win the race today.
Yeah.
And it might as well be him. I mean, I could see a scenario where there's a couple of different pace duels at various times of the race, and he loops the field and comes flying home a la Drosselmeyer or a horse like that.
Yeah.
That just can really finish. We know he can get the mile and a quarter. So I think he has a better chance maybe than a lot of people think, maybe even Elliot Walden.
And, you know, what, he's 15, what, the 15-1 in the morning
line? Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Belmont Stakes winner?
Right. Yeah, what happens if he wins and pays $30? Do you leave here going, what a sap I am?
You absolutely do. No question. There's no question about that. I mean, it's like we just talked about for the last couple minutes. It's just a phenomenal betting race. And when it's over, maybe Wall will be sitting there saying, Why didn't I see that?
Yeah, yeah. Very much like a Kentucky Derby.
Right,
type
yeah,
of scenario,
that's what Baffert
right?
said, yeah.
Very
yeah,
much
absolutely.
Like that. I can certainly see this being that kind of a puzzle coming up later today. How about outside of the Travers, outside of the Ballston Spa with Lady Eli? What other races, Timmy, are you looking forward to watching here today?
Well, I'm looking forward to the King's Bishop. You know, that's always such a wild race, you know, and I've been on Mohamed's bus ever since the Triple Crown, I mean, and before. So, of course, I have to go with him. You know, you get a little bit of price of him on him. But, you know, like Baffert's DeFrong looks like a serious horse. I think that, I mean, you can make a case for just about all the horses in that race, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't, but you might, I'll be throwing money on Mohamed only out of, I do still think he's a serious horse, but there's a lot of sentiment with me with that one, you know. And
how come?
Because I've always liked him, and I've always bet him.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think he's a major player in that race.
I do, too.
On the turn back.
I mean, it's, the whole card is just, I've still got a headache after looking through that whole thing yesterday.
I
mean,
I spent 7 straight hours.
Yeah.
Handicapping the card. I got up at 5:30 and worked till 12:30. And at the end of it, I was absolutely exhausted. I mean, I had nothing left. I actually had to go lay down and take a nap because I had just spent so much time studying the races. And I don't usually spend that much time, but it was necessary.
I left at 9 o'clock last night. P.M. So, yeah, it was... You know, there's a lot of head-scratching races, but that's what makes this game fun.
That's what makes it fun. It's going to be a tremendous day of racing here this afternoon, kicking off a little bit earlier than normal with Travers Stakes Day, but that's what it's all about. Our coverage, 3 to 6 Eastern time. Travers coverage all presented by Sunrise Stallions, and it's all part of our continuing coverage of Saturdays at Saratoga, which is presented throughout the entire meet by visitbarbados.org. And by the way, if you swing by here at our broadcast position at the bottom of Section B of the clubhouse, you can enter to win a trip for two to Barbados. You can do that this week, next week. The drawing will be held next Saturday, so you have until then to get your entry filled out, and we'll draw that winner next week.
Yes, can I enter?
I was going to make sure you got one before you left.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Why not?
They want everybody to come to Barbados.
I know.
Turf riders included.
Sandy
Sign
Lane
me up.
Gold Cup, first Saturday in March.
Wow. Yeah. It'll be snowing up here, and you'll be
although
going
it didn't snow here last year.
Really?
We didn't get any snow at all.
Wow.
Mildest winter on record.
Wow. Timmy, before we let you go, how can people continue to follow you throughout the entire year, not just here at Saratoga?
Well, they can buy the Albany Times Union because nobody buys newspapers anymore if they're up here. But I have a Twitter account at TJ Wilkin. And
that's impressive because last year I don't think you knew the actual.
No, I mean, I remember the first. I never was a Twitter guy.
Yeah.
I remember the first time they told me I had to start doing that stuff, and I didn't realize when you put a tweet out, I hate that word tweet, but it went up on the homepage of the Albany Times Union. The first tweet I ever put out was Twitter is for morons. My bosses just love that.
That's great. You have a check mark too, the coveted check mark.
I know. Means I'm verified. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I guess.
Had to pay a few bucks for that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know how that happened, but it happened.
Well, Tim Wilkin, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the exclusive provider of the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle and the official apparel of horse racing. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Timmy, appreciate the visit and all the best here today. No running when you leave
No running at the Travers.
Chris Kay's got his BB gun out, ready to take some shots. But I appreciate you giving me the time to come on. I always enjoy being here with you guys, and you guys do a great job.
It's a tradition.
It's a
Travers tradition.
Like none other, as they say in the Masters.
That's right.
A tradition like none other. Good stuff, Timmy. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, Tim Wilkin, Albany Times Union here on HRRN, and that means it is time now to segue into our Right or Wrong segment presented by Sunrise Stallions. Of course, the home to Big Brown, Frost Giant, and his full brother, Heavy Breathing. You can learn more by visiting sunrisestallions.com. And to help me with that, I'm joined now by the Big A, Anthony Stabile.
Yeah,
no, really.
Right or wrong?
Hey, Big
A, am I right?
What's up?
What do you think?
All right,
right
well, there we go. Hey, Nikki Zito chimes in, too. Why not? Big A, what's up, man?
I know one thing, Baron. They may have Wilkin might be verified, but he's certainly certifiable.
Well, he's not too happy with you right now for not showing up to say hello this morning. Right or wrong?
That's probably right from what I heard on the radio, yes. Thanks for saying, by the way, Pontiff, thanks for having my back with the risotto.
No, yeah. No, it was outstanding. Very, very good. We all enjoyed dinner last night.
Yeah, right or wrong. I'll take right on that one. No doubt that was absolutely tremendous. All right, Big A, here we go. Number one. All right, I know we just talked about this. I know it's a grade two, and I know there's six grade one races on today's program, but that decision by Naira to put the Ballston Spa after the Travers, a race that features the return of undefeated Lady Eli, was, well, a good call. Is that right or wrong?
No, that's wrong. This was a terrible call from a couple of different standpoints. A, if you're a gambler, you want Flincher out of that pick four sequence. Guarantee, you hang a $1 million guarantee on your all stakes grade one pick four, and you put a free bingo square in there. You know, you'd rather have Lady Eli in there, number one. Number two, from a television and radio standpoint, Lady Eli's a story. You want to see her come back. She's a perfect six for six. She has some name recognition. You want to see her come back. And three, those races after the main event, which of course today is the Travers, you know, they're going to thin the crowd out a little bit and make it a little easier to get out of that place. People are going to stay around to watch Lady Eli run, and it's just going to make it out of there later on a bit of a disaster. I think this is a bad call on all counts.
Yeah, I would happen to agree with you. I don't like it at all. I'd like to see that race put into the main body of the field, so to speak, with the greatest stakes action today. I'd love to be able to cover it. We have 3 hours of coverage this afternoon on the network. We're not even going to get to really talk about Lady Eli because she's going to run after we go off the air at 6 Eastern. So, to me, it's really dropping the ball on the part of Naira. I don't know what they were thinking with this one. Tim Wilkin brought up the point that they should move that race to Sunday and give Lady Eli and the Ballston Spa. Look, she's not the only good filly in there, as Jude brought up. This is a really strong race, and unfortunately, nobody is really going to get to witness it other than being here on track, and if you're able to, you know, catch it somewhere on one of the racing networks, then, you know, that's the only way you can do it. I think it's a very, very poor decision, I would agree.
Am I right? What do you think? Right or wrong?
All right, number two. Naira had messages on the video boards yesterday and even this morning stating, quote, rules for Travers Day. The first rule was no running. No running on Travers Day, essentially killing one of the greatest traditions of Travers Stakes Day, the running of the bulls, with everyone trying to get a primo spot as soon as the gates open. Big A, this is absurd. Right or wrong?
That's wrong. I think it's a great idea. I'm going to tell you why.
What?
A, I love the fact that there are rules like it's Fight Club. B, and this is more important, guys like me, we champion the fact that running should be banned, period. I don't run. I have no reason to run. I leave the running to the horses. I walk, or as my lovely co-host, Acacia Courtney, says, I amble. We jaywalked in Saratoga the other day. I said, no. I jamble. So there's never a need for running, in my opinion. I have no problem with Naira with this.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. I was one of those people that, when I first started coming here back in the late 80s, used to line up very, very early in the morning, had my cooler, had my chair, and I would, as soon as the gates opened, I would sprint to get to a picnic table at the top of the stretch, because if you didn't get one, you were on the outside looking in, and that was the only shot that we had, because, heck, you know, I'm only coming over here at the time with $25-$30 in my pocket, and I got to make it last all day. And you couldn't afford to spend the $3 or whatever it was for a grandstand seat, so, because that was money you had to bet with. So you had to sprint. You had to run to get the picnic table. To me, it's a great tradition. Hey, if somebody trips and falls, they trip and fall. That's not good, but it's going to happen. It's one of the great traditions. I think it's an awful decision to put that up on the board and say no running. Kills that tradition.
I've never fell ambling, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, right or wrong? Am I right? What do you think? Right or wrong?
All right, Big A going to be part of our coverage this afternoon on the Horse Racing Radio Network, 3 to 6 Eastern. Anthony Stabile, we'll see you out here, my friend.
See you in a bit, guys.
All right, and that segment brought to you by Sunrise Stallions each and every Saturday during the Saratoga meet. We're back with more right after this word from Sunrise.
Sunrise Stallions.
home of Big Brown, Frost Giant, and his full brother, Heavy Breathing. With 18% stakes horses from starters, Frost Giant continues to produce exciting runners, including top two-year-olds, winning against Open Company and in stakes competitions.
Bobby on Fleek, very impressive six-length winner here.
Sonido moving clear to win easily.
Miss Freeze, a sharp stakes-winning debut.
Learn more about Frost Giant, Big Brown, and Heavy Breathing at SunriseStallions.com.
Well, you know, Kentucky bred means quality bred, and Kentucky leads all other states combined in number of, and percentage of stakes winners produced. Now, how about these stats? Kentucky breds continue to make waves in the top races abroad as well. Since January 1st of this year, 31 of the 33 victories in group races by horses bred in the U.S. have been, guess what? Kentucky breds, including Group 1 winners in Europe, Teppan and Hawkbill, as well as two-year-olds Caravaggio and Lady Aurelia. To date this year, there have been 74 group wins or placings by Kentucky breds in Europe, Japan, and Dubai. Kentucky breds are a force wherever they race, so unlike most state bred programs, Kentucky bred group winners are eligible to receive breeder awards worldwide. Make sure you get your next Kentucky bred very, very soon and take advantage of that very lucrative program worldwide. We're back to take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup in our next segment on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home for Saturdays at Saratoga and the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwiches, Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What do we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello?
Hello, boss? Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Roger.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Roger.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your
house
is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the Godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience. Horse racing is a major professional sport where you can own your own team without spending millions to play. West Point Thoroughbreds can get you started competing in horse racing partnerships for a fraction of the cost of building a stable of your own. You don't need to know a lot about horse racing. West Point manages your horses. You show up on game day and enjoy all of the fun. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit West Point, T as in Tom, B as in boy.com. That's WestPointTB.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities. Ramsey Farms Kitten's Joy.
They're racing up to the wire. Divisadero with a nose down in front to win it.
It is going to be Camelot Kitten. Camelot Kitten did it.
But the Christmas pass to Sharp Kitty by three.
A champion sire who continues to prove he's world class.
Tarif takes him on and Tarif gets up to beat George Patton.
Inside the final 100 yards. Hawkbill is going on to win the Eclipse.
Kitten's Joy, a world class sire. Standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com. Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interests and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And they're into the stretch, and Destin has taken the lead of the Belmont Stakes. Stradivari is there. Governor Malibu couldn't get through on the inside. He is in traffic. Exaggerator, here comes Lonnie on the far outside, and Creator is coming too. It is Destin in front. Creator, Lonnie on the outside. Destin and Creator, these two come down to the line together. Too close to goal. It was Creator and Destin right on the wire. And Erad Ortiz raised his whip in victory, but it is very close in the Belmont Stakes.
Well, it was indeed close that afternoon, but it was Creator's Nose who got to the wire first over Destin. We'll see the two of them square off yet again this afternoon in a highly contentious renewal of the Travers Stakes, the 147th running set for 5:44 Eastern. Going to get set to take you down the road to the Kentucky Derby, and Jude will provide his thoughts on who he feels is going to win this year's Travers, and it's not an easy puzzle to decipher. But I want to pass along a couple of the changes in the stakes races here before we do that. In the King's Bishop, race number 8, you can scratch number 9, Jazzy Times, for Bob Baffert. Jazzy Times not going to go to the post in the King's Bishop. The following race is race number 9. That's the Grade 1 Forgo, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Sprint Division. Two scratches from that one. Number 5, Anchor Down, for Todd Pletcher, was scratched, as was number 12, Marking, for Kieran McLaughlin. And the 11th race, we already told you, the Travers Stakes. Scratch number 11, Mahesto, spiked a fever yesterday. And the race following the Travers is the Grade 2 Ballston Spa. Number 1, Sweet Acclaim, has been scratched from the Ballston Spa. So those are the changes as they pertain to the stakes races. You can check NYRA.com or Equibase.com to get the remaining races as well. JT, how about this 147th running of the Travers? Now down to 13, but, boy, a bit of a head shaker.
Yeah, well, you heard the interview with Timmy Wilkin, and it's one of those races where you can make a case for almost everybody. And there's a lot of speed in the race. There's horses that can finish big. It's a race, too, where there's horses that are inexperienced. So lots of factors going into this race.
So who wins it?
Well, I
put you right on the spot.
I put American Freedom on top, and I'll tell you why. You know, I was lucky enough to spend the time before the Sir Barton with Bob Baffert in the Winner's Circle at Pimlico, and Bob explained this horse's whole history to me and what he was planning on doing with the horse, and he's, you know, lived up to Bob's expectations. There was a moment there after the Sir Barton at Pimlico when the NBC cameras caught Bob and I high-fiving after the race because he was telling me how much he loved this horse, and I was so happy for him that he won. And then, you know, he went to the Iowa Derby and just absolutely blitzed the field. Now, granted, that wasn't a tough race, but, you know, he won very easily. Last time in the Haskell, I liked him, and he was, you know, unfortunately, the rain caused a little bit of an issue in the Haskell, and it was a terrible day at Monmouth. But he ran second. He ran a good race to Exaggerator, who obviously loves the mud.
All right, so you and I had a little fun last night at the house. So the Pittsburgh Steelers on their pregame do a segment where they talk about what the headline's going to read the next day in the Pittsburgh paper. So here in Saratoga, what's the headline going to read tomorrow here in Saratoga?
Well, we've got the national anthem, so we're going to stand up.
All right, let's go ahead and take a break. A word from Gainesway here on HRN.
Power.
But Frosted has won with ease in the Whitney.
Passion.
It was Creator and Destin right on the wire, and Erad Ortiz raised his whip in victory.
Performance.
Time and Motion's got her. Time and Motion has upset Catch a Glimpse and the Lake Placid.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, the two-time champion sire, is once again the leading general sire in 2016. Tappet has produced 17 Grade 1 winners, 50 graded stakes winners, 13 millionaires, and more than $100 million in lifetime progeny earnings, and was the leading commercial sire at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Selected Yearling Sale by both average and median. Find your Tappet yearling at the upcoming Keeneland September Sale. When you purchase a Tappet yearling, your chance of getting a graded stakes winner is the highest. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
And that rendition of the national anthem kicks things off here on Travers Day at Saratoga. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, JT, we have about 1 minute left. Real quick, what's the headline going to read tomorrow?
It's going to read, Freedom Trumps Pharaoh for Baffert at the Spa.
All right, I'm going to go with Exaggerator embellishes case for three-year-old championship honors in the Travers. We'll see. All right. Our thanks to all of our guests for joining us here this morning. That's Marshall Cassidy, Javier Castellano, Chad Brown, Tim Wilkin. And, of course, if you missed any portion, go check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. Join us this afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern, for that Travers coverage presented by Sunrise Stallions. You can listen in English, horseracingradio.net, SiriusXM, and on affiliates across the country. And, yeah, you can tune in at hrnenespanol.com in Spanish. For our producers, Lee Delapina, back in our Lexington studio. For Sean C. on site with us. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you this afternoon on HRRN. Hey, go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.